Mysteries and challenges of birth, life and death, becoming a new human being. Chapter 7, Becoming Free from Illusion. Reflection. In Logion 7 of the Gospel of Thomas, Jesus says, "Lucky is the lion that the human will eat, so that the lion becomes human. And foul is the human that the lion will eat, and the lion still will become human." This statement is quite remarkable because it was, and still is, very unusual for people to eat lion meat. Of course, it is undesirable that people are eaten by lions. But why would it be good for a lion to be eaten by a human being? If we take this logion literally, we cannot do much with it. But as soon as we realize that the lion represents the animal state in a human being, and man the incorruptible state, then the solution of the riddle will become clear at once. We were created as human beings, but we are not yet a finished product. Not yet a being as it was meant in God's plan. We are half animal and half human. Or as Hermes Trismegistus says, mortal as to the body and immortal as to the essential man. This duality is aptly represented by the Egyptian Sphinx, a mystery animal with the body of a lion and the head of a man. When we live from that which is really human within ourselves, from the spirit spark in the heart, and the God-human nature in us guides our being, then the animal nature will be subordinate to it, and thus serve its inner master. Then the lion is symbolically eaten by man. However, when the Lion King reigns in us, if he symbolically eats man, then the divine nature cannot grow within us, and we remain a cultivated human animal, powerful perhaps, but completely earthly. When you come to think of it, why are there so many symbols, stories, and parables in the Bible? And in all the other sacred scriptures. Why don't the authors just write clearly and directly what they want to convey, so that everyone can understand their points immediately? Why all these mysteries and veils? The disciples had this question too, and asked Jesus why he spoke to the common people in parables. And he then answered, "Unto you it is given to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it is not given." People who go a spiritual path learn to tune in to the domain of the soul, that is, the pure astral world of the concrete archetypes that will enter our consciousness in the form of symbols, analogies, correspondences, myths and similarities. Our inner understanding will grow if we are connected to this experiential world, called the Hall of Learning in the book The Voice of the Silence. And Jesus therefore advises, know what is in front of your face, and what is hidden from you will be disclosed to you. For there is nothing hidden that will not be revealed. From the Gospel of Thomas, Logion 5. Many assume that they will understand immediately what is conveyed to them, especially when it comes to so-called veiled knowledge. This view is incorrect because the development of inner understanding and discernment demand perception, sensitivity, meditation, and certainly time. If you talk to children about life, you have to do so in simple images and words, because their understanding is still limited. And if you want to understand scientific theories, it requires a years-long preparation. Many holy texts not only have a conventional meaning, a literal interpretation, but also a higher meaning, which reveals itself only when a person is ready for it. And thus the parable of the talents has a deeper meaning than an urge to use our talents for someone for whom we work. In his book, The New Man, Maurice Nicol maintains that all sacred writings have the purpose to transfer higher knowledge and a deeper meaning on the basis of ordinary knowledge that is only the starting point. According to Nicol, parables were deliberately intended to be understood first at an ordinary level of consciousness, but at the same time to influence us in such a way that later, when this ordinary level of consciousness is lifted to another level of understanding, then the embedded message becomes possible. From this point of view, a parable is thus a stepping stone between a lower and a higher level in the development of our understanding. Nicol therefore calls a parable a meaning transformer. How can we now, through this insight, interpret the parable about the rich man and poor Lazarus? The story starts telling us about a rich man dressed in purple and fine linen and enjoying life to the fullest. Thereafter, we heard about the miserable state of Lazarus, a poor man who was leprous, hungry, must beg for bread. Both of them die. Lazarus is carried by angels to the bosom of Abraham, while the rich man comes into the realm of the dead and suffers greatly because of the heat there. This could indeed be a correct sketch of what two completely different people may experience following the death of their physical bodies. After discarding the earthly covering, the microcosm arrives in a location that corresponds to the inner vibrational key. Poor Lazarus experiences the heavenly consolations of the spiritual tradition to which he adhered, one that began with the patriarch Abraham. He cannot as yet enter the kingdom of heaven, but makes his abode in a pleasant place in the realm of the dead, referred to as the Devachan in Theosophy. Unlike Lazarus, the rich man receives no consolation, but instead suffers the pain of the fire of purification. He finds himself in an intermediate sphere known in the Catholic tradition as purgatory, or the mountain of purification, and in Theosophy as Kama Loka. In the microcosm which we now inhabit, many residents have lived before us in all kinds of circumstances. Perhaps they were personalities that resembled the rich man or poor Lazarus. Poor people and sick people can draw comfort and hope from this parable about the rich man and poor Lazarus, because they know that death will put an end to the miserable condition in which they find themselves, because it will bring a deliverance from their needy situation and offer them the prospect of more pleasant circumstances. Conversely, it would be wrong for rich and healthy people to interpret this parable as if a terrible judgment awaits them after death, because there is nothing wrong with enjoying good things. It is okay to be rich, and it is fine to be healthy. When interpreting teachings and parables, it is important to take the context of the narration into consideration. Then it will be easier to discover its deeper meaning. And Jesus tells this parable because some greedy Pharisees belittle him. The Pharisees formed a fundamentalist movement within Judaism in the time of Jesus. They maintained a strict observance of the rules of the Torah. For many Pharisees, the laws of Moses were no longer a means, but their goal. They derived their identity and self-confidence from their encyclopedic knowledge of the Jewish religious laws and the high respect they received from other people. They pretended to be holy, but in reality they were focused on acquiring more and more property, power and fame. And in chapter 23 of the Gospel of Matthew, we read how Jesus confronts these hypocritical people with their lack of authenticity, their sneering remarks and resulting evil consequences. And he says, "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye tithe mint and anise and cumin, and have left undone the weighty matters of the law, justice and mercy and faith. But these ye ought to have done, and not to have left the other undone. Ye blind guides that strain out the net and swallow the camel. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye cleanse the outside of the cup and of the platter, but within they are full of from extortion and excess. Thou blind Pharisee, cleanse first the inside of the cup and of the platter, that the outside thereof may become clean also. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye are alike unto whited sepulchres, which outwardly appear beautiful, but inwardly are full of dead men's bones and of all uncleanness. Even so, ye also outwardly appear righteous unto men, but inwardly ye are full of hypocrisy and iniquity." The Pharisees should recognize themselves in the rich man in the parable, who lives lavishly, dressed in purple and fine linen. When a person has the color purple in his aura, it indicates that he or she is spiritual, mystical, harmonious. The Pharisees probably did not have it, but to keep up appearances, they wore purple outwardly. In fine linen, colored with the expensive purple dye that was extracted from certain sea snails and quite the fashion for dignitaries. In the Gospel of Thomas, Jesus says, "If a blind person leads a blind person, both of them would fall into a hole. Damn the Pharisees, they are like a dog sleeping in the cattle manger. The dog neither eats nor lets the cattle eat." Most of us are aware that in each of us there is a Pharisee, or for that matter a lion, with a natural urge to spoil the true and higher human being in ourselves as well as in others. You can master the hypocrite and the lion within yourself by being vigilant and not giving them power. If you've listened to this book so far, you can safely assume that there is also in you a poor sick Lazarus who wants to be nourished, comforted, and healed. The name Lazarus is derived from the Hebrew word Eliezer and means "God has helped." Lazarus is the inner man who raises his eyes to the mountains from where his help will come. He knows from within that he cannot walk the way back to his father's house on his own, but that his help must come from the Lord, as it says in Psalm 121. He receives help from the brotherhood because he listened to the soft voice emanating from the spirit spark. And Lazarus experiences that he is poor in spirit. He mourns because he feels that his entire human system is severely ill compared to the original man. He is meek because he can empathize with the difficulties of others. Because of his own experience, he is hungry for the bread of life and yearns for true righteousness. If a man with this signature advances inwardly, despite his dire personal circumstances, or perhaps because of them, he hears the blessed beatitude from the mountain. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are they that hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. The beautiful consolation of Bethlehem, which are the blessings of the birth of light in the heart of the human being, can be experienced in the here and now. The condition is, however, that you do not serve mammon. If you pay too much attention to this god of money, its consequences are comparable to those of committing adultery, as Jesus teaches in Luke 16. There is nothing wrong with money in itself. In our economy, it is defined as undifferentiated purchasing power that is used as a means of exchange, means of payment, and a unit of accounting. It is in fact crystallized astral power that is important to all of society and with which people may expand their possibilities and develop themselves and others. In society, and also on the spiritual path, money will become a problem only if all our desire and attention are directed to it. Greed can lead to a person being overshadowed or even possessed by the dark forces of the astral sphere, which also includes the realm of the dead. Unethical practices arising from selfish motives that cause damage to yourself and others are usually the result of such behavior. The idol of money and the forces that accompany it deceive us and can therefore be seen as aspects of Satan or Mara, the great trickster, who will do everything to make people live in illusion and delusion so that they remain slaves of their desires and their divine potential cannot develop within them. Unfortunately, Mara, the great trickster, is active in all areas of life. We speak of illusion when this deception is directed at the sensory perceptible world, and of delusion when this deception pertains to the astral world. Rudolf Steiner calls these forces Ahriman and Lucifer. Ahriman is the god of darkness and evil in Zoroastrianism. He sends death and sickness to the people to plunge them into misery in order to remain powerful. Lucifer is the name of the angel who revolted against God, was expelled from heaven, and thereby became the devil, the leader of fallen angels or demons who deceive the people. The Ahrimanic forces promote materialization and deceive people by guiding them to fascination with, among other things, possessions, money, materialism, sensual pleasures, technology, media, systems. Luciferic forces promote dematerialization and deceive people by making sure that they become lured by fame, art, pseudo-religion, pseudo-spirituality, mysticism, and occultism, for example. The urge to defy the world can also be explained by the influence of Luciferic forces. Both Ahriman and Lucifer connect with a person's ego and cause the spirit spark to be encapsulated as a result of fascinations, conflicts, addictions, depressions, fears, and magical powers for the ego. Ahriman and Lucifer are opposites, but also often work together to steal the life energy from people and exploit them as slaves, for example, via the internet, mobile phones. Ahriman and Lucifer prowl around like a roaring lion, as it said in 1 Peter, to ensnare humanity in illusion and delusion. They kill souls. In recent century, we have experienced a shift in attention from theology to technology, from Luciferic to Ahrimanic forces. The Bible contains many stories in which we can recognize Ahrimanic and Luciferic forces. The Pharisees were intensely occupied with numerous religious precepts, but completely ignored what really matters in faith. This is Luciferic, because it is pseudo-religion. The reference that the Pharisees are greedy indicates that they were also controlled by Ahrimanic forces. The powers of Ahriman and Lucifer are also mentioned in the Bible, but under different names. Ahriman and Lucifer can be recognized in chapters 40 and 41 of the book of Job. They appear in the form of two monstrous animals that we do not find in nature. They are referred to as Behemoth and Leviathan. Some Bible translators wrongly replace these names with Hippopotamus and Crocodile, because these animals were well known and somewhat meet the characterizations which describe them. This interpretational error illustrates how successful Ahriman, or Behemoth, is in making people believe that the material world is the only reality. Two fearsome animals also appear in chapter 13 of the Revelations of John, in which we can recognize Ahriman and Lucifer. The beast from the earth with the two horns, and the beast from the sea with 10 horns and 7 heads. Ahrimanic and Luciferic beings are not monsters in the sensory world, but in the astral world. It is important that we realize that the astral world is heavily polluted and that we can be more easily victimized by delusion there than in the physical world. Misleading forces also use the teachings and symbols from the universal wisdom doctrine, but distort and abuse them. In Goethe's fairy tale, The Green Snake and the Beautiful Lily, two so-called Will of the Wisps, symbols for Lucifer and Ahriman, lick the gold from the walls of the house of the man with the lamp, symbol for an initiate in Gnostic mysteries, and then deal with this spiritual gold in a very careless and irresponsible way. The astral world reflects everything that humanity produces, desires, and expects, and is therefore also called the mirror sphere, or the reflection sphere. All kinds of elementals, nature spirits, deceased human entities, demons, archons, eons, as well as angels dwell in this astral sphere. A range of strata can be distinguished there, from very grim, hateful and depraved to brilliantly enlightened, loving and exalted. It is important to know that everything in the reflection atmosphere is very plastic. Images and impressions are quickly created there that match the awareness of the person who experiences them. Today, a huge number of texts containing words from the other side, received from an ascended master or even an angel, are being channeled and distributed. They are mostly beautifully phrased platitudes that people like to hear or read, but you are all imitations derived from the reflection sphere. Satan presents himself thus as an angel of light, but is in fact a luciferic being transmitting illusions. The aura of a person offers a certain protection against forces from the reflection sphere that do not match with one's own being. But when, for example, there is fatigue, irritation, anger, depression, then low astral influences can penetrate the aura, causing a certain degree of overshadowing. Those who use alcoholic beverages or drugs open themselves to disastrous astral powers. Cracks may even occur in the aura, through which a person may be captured by astral and etheric scum, which then often cause endless mystery. Influence from the reflection sphere takes place at all levels of society, from the bottom to religious leaders, CEOs of multinationals, presidents and monarchs. Usually, without being aware of it, they are controlled by archons and eons who hold humanity in their grip and benefit when people cannot think for themselves. And they are divided, are dependent, and weak, sick, and anxious. While people live in fear, they are more easily manipulated. Undoubtedly, you have regularly experienced the influence of the reflection sphere yourself. During sleep, for instance, your astral body separates from your physical body and your etheric body, and you travel to the astral plane. Sometimes you may remember this in the form of vivid dreams, but you remain unconscious of much of these travels. Sleep is sometimes called the little brother of death, because there, too, is a cycle through first the physical plane of existence, and then through the reflection sphere. You will probably have had the experience that you entered a room where an uncomfortable atmosphere prevailed, while there were no perceptible indications for this. At that moment, you experienced something of the etheric and astral atmosphere there. Sometimes the surviving partner of a recently deceased person perceives that the deceased is still with him or her at certain moments. That is usually no imagination, but a real experience, although not a physical presence, but an astral one. In the Bible, we are advised in several places not to maintain contact with the dead. The dead are in a process of letting go of their earthly attachment, and then continuing their journey in the reflection sphere and in some cases even to areas above it. Pupils of the soul going a path of initiation already go through these phases to a certain extent well before their death. First of all, they are faced with the task of letting go of their fascination with the sensory world, also known as the hole of ignorance. Secondly, it is important that they develop an intuitive feeling for myths and symbols, which are part of the pure astral world of the concrete archetypes, so that they may work there. There is some danger in this because at the same location, the contaminated astral reservoir of the earthly plane of existence is also present, which can easily be misleading. How can you protect yourself from these delusions? If you detect a response in yourself to what your ego desires, an intention to create a heaven on earth, you can be sure that you are dealing with forces that are far removed from the original divine life field. They may seem to be light, but in reality, they are from the realm of darkness. Like Paul writes, "Prove all things, hold fast that which is good." And in the first letter of John, we also receive some pointers when he writes, "Beloved, believe not every spirit, but prove the spirits, whether they are of God. Because many false prophets are gone out into the world. Hereby know ye the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesseth that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is of God. And every spirit that confesses not Jesus is not of God. And this is the spirit of the Antichrist, whereof ye have heard that it cometh, and now it is in the world already." By confessing that Jesus Christ came in the flesh is not meant that you must believe that Jesus has indeed lived and that he was the Christ. Billions of peoples and demons take this as truth. It is quite possible that some person who knows nothing of the Christian revelation and salvation is still of God. For what really matters is what he or she professes, whether such a person has been transformed into an instrument for the universal brotherhood or Christ hierarchy, that is, whether he has been born again from water and spirit, as John 3 says. With false prophets, personality, soul, and spirit do not form a trinity. Such prophets are not inspired by the Spirit, but work from their I-centered personality. Jesus speaks about this in the Sermon on the Mount when he says, "Beware of false prophets, who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravening wolves. By their fruits ye shall know them. Do men gather grapes of thorns, or figs of thistles? Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but the corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that bringeth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. Therefore, by their fruits ye shall know them. Not every one that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father who is in heaven." Matthew 7. When a pupil of the soul dies inwardly as to the ego, that is, becomes free from his identifications and obstructing earthly attachments, then the influences of Ahriman and Lucifer become ineffective. This could be the symbolic meaning of the two murderers who were crucified with Jesus on Golgotha at the site of the skull. In many even older stories about Krishna in India and Horus in Egypt, it is also written that they were crucified between two thieves. Pupils of the soul must distance themselves from the reflection sphere, from the contaminated astral regions, for that is the absolute condition for an effective influence of the spirit spark, for the blossoming of the rose in the heart. We can certainly learn from the rich visual treasure in the pure astral world of the concrete archetypes, the so-called hall of learning, but we are not meant to stay there. As humanity, we have the task to live in areas that lie above the reflection sphere. We've been called to be servants of an illustrious and elevated cause, and to enter into the hall of wisdom, the pure mental world of the abstract archetypes. This is beautifully expressed in verses 21 to 35 of fragment 1 of the booklet, The Voice of Silence. Three halls, O weary pilgrim, lead to the end of toils. Three halls, O conqueror of Mara, will bring thee through three states into the fourth, and thence into the seven worlds, the worlds of rest eternal. If thou wouldst learn their names, then hearken and remember. The name of the first hall is ignorance, avidya. It is the hall in which thou sawest the light, in which thou livest and shall die. The name of hall the second is the hall of learning. In it thy soul will find the blossoms of life, but under every flower a serpent coiled. The name of the third hall is wisdom, beyond which stretch the shoreless waters of Akshara, the indestructible fount of omniscience. If thou wouldst cross the first hall safely, let not thy mind mistake the fires of lust that burn therein for the sunlight of life. If thou wouldst cross the second safely, stop not the fragrance of its stupefying blossoms to inhale. If freed thou wouldst be from the karmic chains, seek not for thy guru in those mayavic regions. The wise ones tarry not in pleasure grounds of senses. The wise ones heed not the sweet-tongued voices of illusion. Seek for him who is to give thee birth in the hall of wisdom, the hall which lies beyond, wherein all shadows are unknown, and where the light of truth shines with unfading glory. That which is uncreate abides in thee, disciple, as it abides in that hall. If thou wouldst reach it and blend the two, thou must divest thyself of thy dark garments of illusion. Stifle the voice of flesh. Allow no image of the senses to get between its light and thine, that thus the twain may blend in one. And having learnt thine own Ajnana, flee from the hall of learning. This hall is dangerous in its perfidious beauty, is needed but for thy probation. Beware, Lanu, lest dazzled by elusive radiance, thy soul should linger and be caught in its deceptive light. This light shines from the jewel of the great ensnarer, Mara. The senses it bewitches, blinds the mind, and leaves the unwary an abandoned wreck. The moth attracted to the dazzling flame of thy night lamp is doomed to perish in the viscid oil. The unwary soul that fails to grapple with the mocking demon of illusion will return to earth, the slave of Mara.